So, we had a message from a listener who wanted to find out more about kidnapping, specifically in Nigeria, and how they are also proliferating here at home. And we're joined by a guy that really understands the risks associated with violence, insecurity around the African continent. Ryan Cummings, Director at Signal Risk. Welcome back to 702. Always good chatting to you.
Thanks for having me.
So, we got sent an email with a request to explain and uncover on air the political uncertainty in Nigeria and how it directly leads to a proliferation of kidnappings. So maybe let's start from the very beginning. Paint the picture for us. A lot of people hear about Nigeria. A lot of people think that they know about Nigeria and Nigerians, especially when they think about the Nigerians that they meet here in South Africa. But adequately paint the picture for us there, Ryan. What does it mean to wake up in Nigeria on a day-to-day basis and live there?
Well, first and foremost, it's a huge country. As we know, it's Africa's most populous, state. I think the last census mentioned about 200 million people, if I'm not mistaken. And I think depending on where you wake up in Nigeria is going to be vastly different to your experience in another part of the country. So we know that the northeast, for example, that's where the Boko Haram insurgency is most active. Extensive violence taking place there. In the northwest of the country, we have these bandit groups, which is, almost like organized crime that we have here in South Africa, but just on a very, very pervasive scale. Out in the south of the country, we have some militants that have really rallied around the oil industry, claiming that their community is not benefiting from oil revenues and that, farming and fishing activities within this region has been decimated by the hydrocarbon sector. And they themselves have engaged in, forms of militancy against the Nigerian state, but also commercial enterprises operating within this region. And the common thread across all three of these, organizations or networks, if I can call them that, is that they all employed kidnapping as an operational tactic. So they use kidnapping either as a means of garnering financial concessions in the form of ransom payments that are made by family members or even, corporations or sometimes the Nigerian government itself in exchange for hostages, or they use hostages as a means of kind of gaining some form of political concessions, which are, very specific to the group in question.
You painted a very good picture for us in terms of the overall instability of the country and indeed how various groups, terror and otherwise, have, for lack of a better word, capitalized on the situation. But one thing that really scares me about Nigeria is that 43% of all Nigeria's people live below the poverty line. And on top of that, another 25% are vulnerable. And I think that it's important because it goes to building an environment in which people are so desperate that they will listen to terror groups that are pawning an agenda that it claims to be one thing, emancipation, when it is just really practically not.
Yeah, absolutely. It is one of the countries that are, it's really struggling in terms of its socioeconomic conditions, which has been worsened by the pandemic. I think in March it was the National Bureau of Statistics, which is, the Nigerian equivalent of Stats, they actually released a report stating that Nigeria now is has the second highest global rates of unemployment, just second to Namibia in this regard. And that really, really reinforced, kind of the conditions that a very youthful Nigerian population is facing. And obviously in this regard, it does have an impact on issues of criminality due to, economic desperation. And there are a plethora of groups that have organized and that have an anti-state agenda, which is actively recruiting, Nigerian youths on this basis, on the fact that they can provide them with some form of employment, they can provide them with a form of power in the form of access to weapons. And in this regard, it really is representative, this economic situation, the significant population that is facing a degree of economic desperation. the number of groups that have turned against the Nigerian state, who actually want to break away from the federalist system of Nigeria, which are then enabling or exploiting, you know, this pool of disenchanted and disenfranchised youths, you know, and seriously engaging in acts of criminality and wider violence.
And Ryan, as soon as we thought that maybe Nigeria had found a leader that was going to seriously take on these insurgencies, we've seen a recent admittance by Muhammadu Buhari that that insurgency and violence has, I mean, I don't think he's went as far as saying it's gotten the better of government, but government is simply not handling.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when Buhari came into government in 2015, much of his election campaign at the time, and I must admit that this was a year after the infamous kidnapping of the 276 girls from occupied Boko Haram movement, that Buhari basically campaigned on the issue of national security or insecurity and issues of corruption, stating that his presidency, you know, if elected to power, will mark a kind of U-turn from the Goodluck Jonathan administration at the time and bring stability and bring security to Nigeria. What has happened, unfortunately, under his tenure is that the situation in many parts of the country has worsened. The insurgency in the northeast is ongoing. We know that there's the banditry operations that I've mentioned in the northwest and north central regions of the country. And now there's this nascent, if I can call it, secessionist movement that is taking hold of the southeast of the country and also in the southwest. And this is just really, really turning the tables on Buhari, because it seems that the Nigerian state has become more insecure under his watch, and that he has failed to achieve one of his core mandates.
So how does kidnapping fall into this? And what is the most common modus operandi, right? Because we hear about these big ones, you know, several hundred schoolgirls, they get kidnapped, it makes the news headlines, bring back our girls, becomes a hashtag. But this is not the only kidnappings that do take place, right?
Absolutely. You know, kidnapping takes place, you know, quite significantly across Nigeria, targets, you know, everyday citizens, middle-class citizens, wealthy citizens, obviously, and also a lot of expatriates. And there's a number of groups that carry this out. You know, one can almost draw parallels to the proliferation of cash and transit price in South Africa. You know, the degree with what that form of criminality takes place in South Africa, kidnapping is at a similar, if not much higher scale in Nigeria. And the perception is that because it's a low-risk and high-reward undertaking, you know, the fact that there is a willingness first for, you know, individuals who are kidnapped to be then used to extort financial concessions. Legislation in the country, you know, around kidnapping is not great, so it doesn't provide a very, you know, kind of strong, you know, punitive response to this form of criminality, at least, you know, not in all states of the country. And then there's also the issue of law enforcement, the ability by the Nigerian police force, the state security sector, to actually mitigate against the threat of the crime. And it started out in southern Nigeria, you know, with groups mobilized around the oil sector and were kidnapping expatriates to get those financial concessions or to get, you know, communities being given greater social welfare from the state. And kind of the success of those kidnappings just saw, you know, the issue kind of proliferate across many Nigerian states, and even insurgent groups such as Boko Haram are using this tactic at the moment. So it is really a low-risk undertaking for many of these groups, because we do not see many prosecutions, and there's a high reward associated with it, because the perception is among Nigerians that if you do pay a cash ransom, you're generally going to get you know, your loved one returned safely. And it's an economy in Nigeria, and probably the country with one of the highest kidnapping rates in the world at the moment.
Yeah, having a look at poverty in Nigeria as a whole, InPoverty.org says there are now more people in Nigeria living in grinding poverty than there is in India. They're recently overtaking India towards the end of last year. It once again speaks to the whole environment that gets created in which a kidnapping seems like a viable alternative to absolute hunger and poverty. You're not to excuse the actions in any way, shape, or form, but it certainly provides, the fertile environment for this type of thing to take place.
Absolutely. I mean, in the absence of a formal economic system that works for everyone, people are going to tend to, an informal economy or an illicit economy in many cases. I think South Africa, we can all agree, is a country that faces a similar problem. And kidnapping is one of those illicit economies which, takes place in Nigeria. There's various other forms of organized crime that takes place. But certainly, again, it's an issue which, which at the moment, subsequent governments in Nigeria have treated the symptoms, of kidnapping rather than its root cause, which does lie in very, very significant and acute socioeconomic grievances, which don't seem to be getting any done. I mean, the big issue at the moment is Nigeria is so dependent on oil revenue, and which accounts for about 90% of government earnings, which itself is using to provide public services, to generate employment and to just kind of provide some form of social welfare. And during the COVID-19 pandemic, the demand for oil was at a very, very low degree. This means that government really needs to knock, and it means that the government has less fiscal capacity to provide the services that Nigerians so desperately need at this time. So until this kind of dependence on oil gets relieved, and there's great economic diversification, a more inclusive economy built, and the ability for formal economic structures to absorb Nigeria's growing youth population, unfortunately, issues such as kidnapping and wider crimes will continue to be a go-to option, for people as a basic means of subsistence.
Well, we're talking to Ryan Cummings, director at Signal Risk. It's part of our listener's choice feature, talking about kidnappings in Nigeria. We're going to go off and pay the rent in a moment, but Ryan, don't go anywhere. I'm keen to ask you about how the proliferation of kidnappings in Nigeria, could that ever become a thing on local soil? Coming up next on the Clement Money Teller Show.
702 podcasts are on 702.co.za.
We're talking about kidnappings in Nigeria with the director at Signal Risk, Ryan Cummings. Ryan, it's always a pleasure chatting to you. And we're going to move away from Nigeria now, and we're going to talk about kidnappings in South Africa. I mean, this is quite a while ago, but the fact that I could come to is that there's around 4,000 kidnappings occurring each year, with on average a child going missing every 4 to 5 hours. Now, I didn't know that it was as prolific as that here in South Africa. But what is the picture starting to look like in terms of not only kidnapping children, but kidnapping executives to extract a ransom?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the kidnapping phenomenon in South Africa, and I think where it differs to Nigeria considerably, is that a lot of it is has been linked to familial disputes and issues, where there is much more communal in nature, so it's not necessarily criminally motivated. Although, with large abductions, likely spiking that abductions that we've seen with regards to children in particular, there's anecdotal evidence to suggest that this might have been to human trafficking, which again, as is the case in Nigeria, is also quite a common, if I can call it, form of kidnapping at this time. The key issue, though, in South Africa is that we're starting to see this kidnapping for ransom and extortion starting to take place. We specifically look at the South Asian community that is resident in South Africa, specifically members of the Pakistani community, Bangladeshi community, who have settled here and who are running quite successful businesses. They've been targeted in some kidnappings, which have been actually related not to South African nationals that have been carrying these abductions out, but actually members of the Pakistani and Bangladeshi community abroad, just showing the extent of how these organized criminal networks work, that the diaspora in another country still remains at risk of being targeted for extortive kidnappings. We also see in areas in South Africa that's neighboring Mozambique, for example, the Mozambique specifically, Maputo and Matola, kidnapping is a big issue, you know, within these cities, you know, to the point where some wealthy Mozambicans have actually moved across the border, you know, to live in South Africa, but, you know, to escape the kidnappings that are taking place within those major urban centers. I must say that this is completely separate from the insurgency that's obviously happening in northern Mozambique. These are organized crime networks and not necessarily militant networks responsible for the crimes. But even, you know, Mozambicans that have settled in South Africa still find themselves, you know, the targeting or being targeted for kidnap for ransom, you know, by Mozambican criminal syndicates that cross the border and basically target these individuals within South African borders. That said, we've been tracking, you know, some kidnappings recently that have been targeting South African executives. And very, very worryingly that these, at least two incidents to date has been directly connected to Islamist extremism. There was an individual that was kidnapped last year, by a group, you know, when they actually found the individual in the safe house where he was being kept. I think it was in the Kensington area of Johannesburg. We found that the group in question, you know, had paraphernalia associated with the Islamic State. You know, at the house where he was being held, and there was the suggestion that the kidnappers were actually extorting a ransom as a means of providing funding for the Islamic State's, you know, affiliate that's operating in northern Mozambique at this time. So that, you know, while it's still kind of isolated incidents that have taken place in this regard, it does suggest a worrying trend that kidnapping in South Africa, both from a criminal perspective, but also in terms of transnational terrorism, could become an operational tactic that could be increasingly, you know, leveraged upon, you know, by these networks in the near to medium term.
Ryan, last question before I let you go. We're talking about kidnappings, and we're talking about kidnapping on home soil here. How big is the threat? Is it growing? Is it diminishing in terms of global terrorism threats to South Africa? And I'm specifically thinking around about that unsolved shooting in Melville over New Year's 2019 into 2020. There were, at some point, investigations suggesting that that was terror-related. So how does this paint the overall picture for us?
Yeah, that's quite interesting because the kidnapping that I referenced where the individual was abducted and then subsequently liberated by the South African police in the Kensington area of Johannesburg, you know, at the safe house, there was actually the number plates that was associated with the vehicle involved in the Melville shooting. And I know that investigations are ongoing as to kind of confirm that this, you know, that there are actual links between what we perceive as being a cell sympathetic to the Islamic State that was behind this abduction and that might have been responsible in the Melville shootings. But just in terms of general kidnapping trends, I think it's something that is on the increase in South Africa. Again, it's very difficult to discern from South African police statistics because of the way that kidnapping is defined within the country. There's no real differentiation, for example, between a familial abduction or abduction that is linked to criminality or whether an incident can be defined as being linked to terrorism. But certainly, you know, anecdotal observation or and just doing internal trend analysis, it is a threat that seemingly is growing, and specifically within Gauteng province. I know that in Cape Town there has been some isolated incidents as well. And I think it's the opportunity for our state security network to basically, while this is still in a very kind of, you know, nascent stage, to start equipping ourselves with the necessary legislation and the necessary, you know, kind of intelligence networks and also specialized units that can focus on, you know, addressing these criminal threats and you know, kind of clamp down on these form of kidnappings before they really become a hallmark form of crime, as we've seen the case with, you know, cash in transit heists, as I mentioned, and even, you know, robberies at shopping centers, which also started, you know, quite slowly, but picked up when, you know, actors saw that, you know, this is a low risk, but high reward form of criminal activity.
Ryan Cummings, thank you so much for your time in the Clement Manyathelo Show. In 5 seconds or less, how can people follow Signal Risk?
Well, on you can certainly follow us on Twitter. I think our, if I'm not mistaken, our handle is at Signal Risk. I can be followed at my handle, which is at Paul_SEC_analyst. And there you'll get some information on African security, a lot on football, especially on Manchester United and some other Arcadia.
Come on, we're done talking about terrorism. That's terrorism of a different kind. Ryan Cummins, director at Signal Risk. Nice to end up on a lighter note.